Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I very frequently remember to introduce myself, but I did this time. Today's Discover Film podcast is an interview with Steve Doxey. Steve directed Artifice, which is one of my favorite feature films that we've shown at one of the festivals. And the great news is, right now, Artifice is available for free on Amazon Prime, and you can rent it on iTunes. And if you want, at discoverfilm.net, you can check out the preview. Steve did an incredible job on a micro budget, and I was really curious to hear the details of how he managed to pull it off. Okay, no more preamble. Let's talk to Steve. But how did a nice young man from Utah end up making movies in L.A.?
Well, so the star of Artifice has been a longtime collaborator with myself, Brandon Sean Pearson. And my brother and I, my brother was going to college. This was about 12 years ago, and he met Brandon at an acting class. And he had written this screenplay. It was a Shakespeare. It was lines of dialogue from Shakespeare that he then just took out and then put together to form a completely different story.
Really? So lines from different plays as well?
He took lines from all of these different plays, all these different Shakespeare plays, and then blended them together to make a completely different story, which I thought was really, really great. And so my brother, he comes home and tells me about it, and he says, "You got to make this," you know, because I had just started kind of getting into film at the time.
And getting into film meaning like you had a video camera and you were playing with it?
Exactly.
Or like at school? No,
I had actually just started school as well at college, taking film classes and that kind of thing. But really, my love with film didn't start until I was about 17 or 18. So I had just kind of started to get into it, and I dove in head first. I loved it. I was watching movies compulsively. So my brother tells me about Brandon and this screenplay and says, we have to just make this short. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, but I claim to.
And sometimes it just takes confidence and some good instincts.
That's true. So, I mean, really, we had met every week for, you know, months and months planning this short film out, and it turned out to be this 47-minute short film, which was ridiculous.
After you cut it.
After we cut it. I think the rough cut was something like an hour and a half.
So you must have shot for many days.
It was a 7-day shoot. You know, we got a lot of volunteers, and it really was, I always think of it as my film school, in a way. You know, I was going to college and all of that for film, but that was my real film school because we made so many mistakes. We learned so much, you know. I didn't even know really what a schedule looked like.
Right.
I think after day two, my friend says, "We can't have another day like that. We've got to know what we're shooting tomorrow."
Right, so shot lists and things like that.
Shot lists, schedules, you know, the whole thing. So it was a trial by fire. But somehow, we pulled it off. So that was really my introduction to filmmaking and actually making.
Right, and you edited, did you edit that yourself too?
We edited it. And of course, you know, one of those giant mistakes is I feel like independent filmmakers, they don't really think about sound. Even though that's half the picture, but that seems to be the most forgotten element in indie filmmaking. And, of course, we didn't record sound properly. So we then dubbed the entire 47-minute film, which was, that was an adventure. So I learned a lot about sound.
Yeah, and sound is an unbelievable challenge. Yeah, because everyone does just focus on that visual.
Exactly. So it had that nice kind of 1950s Sergio Leone dubbed kind of quality to it, which was very unintentional, but yeah.
What was the title?
It was called Nature's Plague.
Ooh, yes. That is Shakespearean.
And it was kind of a love triangle kind of robbery type thing. It was very much a drama, but yeah, it was an adventure. So that was really my first kind of foray into serious filmmaking. And Brandon and I and my brother have been kind of collaborating ever since. And we really took the same approach to Artifice, to making that. We just said, you know, I had tried to get a previous script that Brandon and I had written funded, tried to go through the proper channels, set up a lot of meetings, years and years and years, but it didn't happen.
Was that, how did that, you come to be aware of that process? I mean,
Were you doing other projects as well?
Yeah, or? I had continued to kind of make short films and that kind of thing, you know. Right. And then I decided I've got to just go out to L.A. if I'm really going to take this seriously. And that was about 7 years ago. So I came out with the intention of getting this film funded. And, you know, we took a lot of meetings and blah, blah, blah. And
hey, you got meetings. Happen. You should be proud you got meetings. A lot of people come and they don't get out of their apartments.
We did. I think we surprised a lot of people just because we were so ambitious to get this film made that they kind of took us a lot more seriously. But ultimately, it kind of fell through. And so at that point, Brandon and my brother and I, we just said, we've got to make something. We've got to, you know, we're going to be 40 or 50, you know, and still not have a film made. So that was kind of the approach that we took to Artivus. We just said,
by the way, were you 30 when you had that realization or were you 29 or were you,
I would have been, so this was 3 years ago. So yeah, 30.
Mm-hmm. Which strikes me as incredibly young now, but I know how it can feel old when you are 30.
Yeah.
You don't picture what 50 is going to be like.
Right. I always thought of, you know, like P.T. Anderson's always been a, I've always looked up to him. He made his first film, I think, when he was 24. And I always set that benchmark, like, I need to make a feature film before I'm 24. And
yeah, but his dad was in the business. Exactly. So it's not fair to you to try to rise to that. Just
that. That's true. Yeah, but I guess I had to compare myself to other filmmakers that were older as we continued get a film made.
In your defense, there are no well-known unsuccessful filmmakers or you know, there's very few examples for you to go, well, you know, there's a guy in North Hollywood who's been trying for 5 years. You can't compare yourself to him unless you meet him at a bar.
Absolutely. Every case is different. I'm learning.
Yeah. So you gave up on the meeting concept and just decided to shoot Artifice?
Exactly. It was one of those things where I was just so exhausted by the idea of getting the film financed through a studio or that kind of system that we just said, we're going to finance it ourselves, come together, we're going to get all of our friends to help us and that kind of thing. And that's really how we approached it.
Really? Your crew was a gathering of favors and friends?
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part, because it looks so... See, I'll tell you, it really does look like you had a decent enough budget to bring in all the top-notch people you need to get that look.
Thank you. I appreciate that. A lot of that came from the fact that, you know, Brandon and I, my brother, had been working in commercials and film for years and years at that point. We developed a lot of great relationships with a lot of talented people. And so,
okay, so I didn't hear about the commercials thing. So you had been doing commercials.
I had also been doing commercials, yes.
Which are short films, which are great experience.
That's right. That really helped me in a lot of ways, too. So I've been kind of producing and directing commercials for the past, I don't know, 6 years or so. So that really, really helps because you get a lot more budget and you get a lot more resources to be able to play with cameras and, you know.
Well, and you have a specific job, which is to affect your audience and change their mind about something, right?
I mean, that's right.
That's probably better training for filmmaking than most people acknowledge.
Absolutely. So that's been a really positive kind of aspect is to be able to do that.
Definitely. Okay, yeah. Count me as impressed. I'm impressed with the commercial angle.
And Brandon comes from a theater background as well, which was great because he met so many talented actors and all that in the theater. And so he was integral in bringing in a lot of the great talent that we had.
Right. So the cast was people he knew.
A lot of them were, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, because it's a great cast.
Thank you. Yeah, they were great. And just, you know, I worked as a production assistant and a second AD. I was always working in film. You know, I've been working full time on film crews for 10 years now. And I mean, just understanding it at a core level, just understanding it from a production assistant standpoint where you're integrating with all of the different departments and you're communicating and learning how all of those departments function together to make a cohesive film.
Right, so you had time all over the place.
That was huge.
In various departments.
Absolutely.
Which gave you respect for them, I assume.
It really, really did. And every, you know, every department is so important. They all have to work cohesively to make it happen. And if you don't really have an understanding, I think you can make a lot of mistakes along the way.
And yet still you didn't have the stars in your eyes that I have to have a Hollywood, you know, you didn't say, I need a crew of 75 beneath me to make my feature. You were right. Willing to do it. It sounds like a little bare boned.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that, you know, had I started making the feature, you know, years before that, I probably would have gone in with that approach. But just kind of working on crews and understanding what you can skimp out on, what you can't skimp out on, you know, what parts are the most essential parts to make the film possible. That's really kind of how we boiled it down and approached it that way.
So, and as a director, well, in the things you did leading up, were you ever camera department or
that's
any
the one,
of that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's the one area that I haven't. I mean, I own my own camera and I do shooting and that kind of thing. But that's the one area where I haven't.
Because the reason I asked is Artifice is so successfully visual.
Mm.
And many times, you know, I mean, I know you're just using light and projection, but it almost, you know, has the Kubrick feel of visuals. You know what I'm getting at?
Absolutely.
And so I'm impressed that, was that stuff that you envisioned or was that stuff that came, was it collaborating with a talented DP and gaffer or?
Definitely both of those aspects. You know, I'm greatly influenced. It's funny that you mentioned, you know, Kubrick, but he's obviously a huge influence and all of that. I mean,
Someone watches Artifice and doesn't think that this guy knows his Kubrick, then they're shame on them.
But the DP who I hadn't actually worked with before, Seth Johnson, was a referral by a friend, and we met, and I had already kind of had a shot list and some visuals kind of planned out. But once I really started talking with Seth, and Seth was telling me about his ideas and what he wanted to kind of bring to the film, it really opened up a whole new world of possibilities with Artifice. So we reapproached it in a lot of ways, and he was a huge contributing factor to Artifice's look and the whole thing. Like, he had this idea, you know, Artifice is about a world within a world, and how do you separate those two worlds? And we did it kind of visually in one way, where Seth would use only certain types of lenses at a, you know, certain depth and all of that for one world. And then he would use a certain type of lenses for the other.
And I bet there's people who noticed. I didn't notice. I just really appreciated a beautiful looking film. But now the next time I watch it, I'll be like, okay, watch the depth. But that's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant because the filmed world should look different than the real world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Seth created some rules for himself and he just stuck to those rules. No, we're in this world. We need to be shooting at a 2.8 on a 18mm lens, you know. So he was great with that.
Great. And so you had someone you could trust and then you could focus on some other things as well.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously the performances are so good. What was your experience directing those actors? I mean,
man, that was a lot of fun. You know, filmmaking for me, the most rewarding part is kind of working with the actors, you know, whether it's rehearsal or just kind of talking about their motivations and talking about their character. I just love that. But I was fortunate enough to have such a talented group of actors that brought so much of that on the day that there wasn't a lot that we necessarily had to work out. You know, it was kind of, we were just kind of playing and experimenting with different things. And Brandon brought a ton of preparation to the role. He has this book that he charted out the arc of his character and where he should be at certain parts of the film. So there was so much preparation on his part.
And I'm obviously grinning because so he had off screen, he had his preparation to be an actor who's preparing. it is kind of meta on that.
It was very meta. Yeah.
But I was going to ask you about rehearsal. You mentioned rehearsal. Did you, because it was a group of friends, did you get to do a lot of rehearsal in advance?
That was the thing. Unfortunately, we didn't get to do a ton of rehearsal because a lot of this was, we were in different states. Some of the actors were in Utah and we were in LA. So we didn't get to do a lot of rehearsal. However, we did talk a lot about, you know, on the phone and what have you, about the characters and kind of the vision behind them.
Yeah, and I guess rehearsal's tough when, if you're asking friends for a favor, saying, for every hour on screen, can you give me 10 hours of rehearsal?
Right.
That's a big ask, too.
It is. But we were able to get a little bit of rehearsal in with some of the actors. You know, I love rehearsing. So we got that in wherever we could get it. But for the most part, a lot of them just kind of showed up and they brought it because, you know, they had kind of done their work beforehand. And that was what was so great is if they come prepared, you can play with it on the day.
And you shot it in Utah?
We shot most of it in Utah. We shot a few days in Los Angeles as well.
Right. So you were you bringing people from LA out to Utah?
We brought two people from LA. Or three, excuse me, yeah. You know what? I have to keep retracting. We brought four people
from
LA out to Utah.
And yeah. Any crew, or was that all Utah crew?
Some crew as well, you know. Yeah. Our DP, Seth.
Were you putting people in homes of friends and family?
That's right, yeah.
It's the things you have to do.
It was wild. You know, my brother, who was involved as well from the beginning, he and his wife were catering. They put up people as well, parts of the crew and all that. Everybody kind of came together on this one.
And how long was the shoot?
So the shoot was a total of 16 days. And it was...
Over 3 weeks, I would guess?
It was over... We shot 6 day weeks. And so, yeah. About 2.5 weeks of shooting. It was wild.
Any memorable moments or?
Oh man, it's all kind of a blur. It really, really is. We were shooting about 10 pages a day. So.
Wow.
Thank goodness the actors came prepared because a lot of it was just so run and gun.
Yeah. You were flying through that.
We were. Yeah. We depended a lot on kind of natural light as well, you know, while Seth was shooting because Seth only had a crew of about two people helping him on lighting and grip, which is really, really small.
So camera and lights total is about three people?
Three to four people, yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing what they were able to do with. So, and we didn't have an actual gaffer. So in a way, Seth was gaffing as well.
Right. So he was cinematographer and light. He was camera and lights.
Mm-hmm.
Proof that you don't need a gaffer.
Oh, I can't say that.
No.
Yeah.
But God, the lighting effects are so good in that. He obviously has a talent for it.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. And you know, we brought in some extra guys to help on lighting on some of our big lighting days with the projector and all of that. So that really helped. Yeah.
Was all the projector stuff just 1 or 2 days or?
I think we shot all of that in 2 days.
2 days.
Maybe three. Thanks. I mean, a lot of it kind of relied on our location as well. We found this great abandoned building. It was an old jar factory or something like that. We mainly made that kind of the home of the film within the film. And it had all of these great little rooms and all of that so that we were able to kind of create this whole world within that factory.
Yeah, that was a great cheat for you because your sets look so... Studio-y,
yeah.
If that's the, you know, I don't know what the adjective would be. But yeah, it looks like you, besides having multiple locations,
Thanks, I mean.
It's very well dressed.
Thank you. It's, you know, the location just does so much of the work for you.
What was the experience like once you completed principal photography? Did you?
That's kind of where things got challenging.
Well, okay.
Yeah, because, I mean. In all honesty, as crazy as it was and as long as the days were and all of that, filming, production really went smoothly. We didn't have any huge hiccups. The crew got along really nicely. It was a beautiful process, production. But post was really, really challenging. Editing it was really challenging. It was because I think we had left a lot more on the page. And saying, all right, we're going to deal with this in the edit. We'll cut some scenes, we'll trim some scenes, you know, which in my mind was kind of a safety net. The more you shoot, the more content that you have to kind of play with in the editing room. But I think in many ways it was a bit of a, I regret that in some ways because I don't like to have to change the story so much in post. But, I mean, you know, an example with Artifice was, you know, the beginning kind of developing that character, developing the Jacob Alexander Hines character. How do we effectively portray him as somebody who's down on his luck, as somebody who's desperate for an acting job and all of that? And, you know, at one point, I think we had written a dog in there. He's got a pet dog to make him a little more sympathetic. We wanted the audience to get behind this character. And we thought of all of these different kind of scenes, and we shot those scenes to kind of develop him. But a lot of it was just, you're not seeing it in the film because it was just not necessary, you know. And I feel like we could have laser focused on his character and kind of developing his raison d'etre of why he wants to be this great actor and what it is that's driving him a little more clearly.
Yeah, well, I think it's there. I mean,
oh, thank you.
I don't think there's much question that you understand this is someone who takes acting very seriously and is seizing an opportunity to dig deep.
Well, I appreciate that you see that.
Well, I don't know if you remember from our Q&A, I'm the one who watches your film, and I see it as a story that goes beyond acting. I see it as a human being facing that challenge in life where you have to face every fear and commit to a level that you weren't sure you were able to do. I mean, I watch it that way. Honestly, if I felt it was just about acting, I'd be a lot less interested. But I see this as a film about the human condition.
Absolutely. Yeah. I appreciate that you see that aspect of it, because that was definitely something that we were kind of going for with that. Yeah, where it's much greater than just acting. You know, it's definitely kind of outside of that as well.
And I mean, it is very cool that your lead character, your protagonist, is seeking excellence, not fame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting just with the whole method acting thing, what actors do and what they personally go through, you know, to portray these roles truthfully. And in many ways, it's much bigger than just acting. I mean, you know, a lot of people see that as kind of silly, but, you know, it's like an artist. It's like anybody who's really trying to strive for something greater than themselves. They put their lives into it. And I think, you know, looking at a dedicated actor, they're doing the exact same thing. They're putting themselves on the line for it. It's they're all the fields in film, they all come with their own set of challenges, don't they? I mean, it's not something you just kind of step up and do. It's interesting though, because I feel like with filmmaking, it does feel accessible to kind of everybody, where people feel like, I can do that. I can act. I've seen a couple movies. I can act. I like watching movies. I can direct. I can shoot, you know?
Absolutely. That's what people think. And then if you were to screen through all the short films submitted to a film festival,
yeah,
you'd see a lot of acting and a lot of filmmaking that by people who thought it might be easy.
It's true.
And it's disastrous.
It's not something you can just walk into, is it?
Yeah, I don't mean to play the violin for me. Someone has to watch these things. But I got to tell you, some nights I just turn to my girlfriend and I go, I'm depressed. I just watched, you know, 5 bad ones in a row, and it's depressing.
Let's talk about respect for festival programming, really.
You know, I think we're the real victims in this whole lack of respect for art.
Because that seems brutal. I have to do a lot of research before going into a film. I hate to admit that, but it's like, if I'm going to sit down for 2 hours,
oh, you make sure, right?
I want it to be worth it. And so,
right. So you're a selective moviegoer.
I guess. I hate to say that though. You know,
because
you know, sometimes I like to just sit down, turn on Netflix, and just randomly kind of point to a film and just say, all right, let's try it out, you know?
Yeah, because you can hit stop pretty easily. But if you're going to the theater...
Yeah, it's a bit of a commitment, isn't it?
If you're plunking down almost $20 to see a movie in L.A.,
yeah,
you should be a conscientious consumer. I try to be.
Yeah.
Just because I want them to make good movies, so I try to only see the good ones. So after you finish Artifice and you get through your difficult post, which I assume, how long were you editing?
Editing, I think the editing process was about 8 months, I want to say. And it was, Brandon was involved in editing, and then Weston Woodbury, who was absolutely integral. He was one of the producers on the film as well. and he was Seth's kind of right-hand man on camera. He edited as well with us, so it was the three of us.
And so he was the hands on the keyboard and mouse guy?
He was.
And you and Brandon were sitting behind him?
That's right. But it's not to say that, you know, Weston didn't come with his own ideas to the editing room, because he 100% did. It was really great. He was fantastic. And so, but that was definitely a challenging period post, because we all kind of came in with our own kind of preconceived ideas of how we saw this film. And so I think that also comes with the looseness of the script in some ways, where I think Brandon kind of maybe had a little bit of a different vision than maybe I did. And so, you know, there was a lot of butting of heads and that kind of thing. And
collaboration requires maturity and intelligence. I mean, you guys made it work.
Yeah. And, but not to say that it wasn't a struggle.
Yeah, no.
It was, but we ultimately did finally come down to a cut. And what was great about Weston is he kind of approached this, the editing, that he wanted to get it in front of as many eyes as he could of our peers, and that from other editors and that. So we went through a lot of screening stages as well with peers on how they reacted to it and what they felt needed
work.
Right,
so you didn't, yeah, you tested it.
We did.
And you listened to people, and then you went back in and did what you thought was best.
We did. But it was interesting because, you know, you test it with one audience or you test it with one group and they say, well, I don't think this character is strong enough. And then the other one says, well, he's too overbearing, you know. And so how do you parse those two opinions to kind of, you know, at times in the editing room, I found myself upside down, not knowing what way is left or right with this edit. I didn't know where to go with it because I had so many different conflicting feedbacks from it. So that was a challenge as well, because you get so deep into the edit that you don't even...
Yeah, the forest for the trees problem.
Yeah. You don't know what's effective anymore. You don't know what's working with it and what's not. And so I kind of had to step away from it.
I was going to say, did you do the weekend off or the, you know, I assume over 8 months, it wasn't 9 hours a day for 8 months.
No.
So you all took time doing other work, I assume, too, and then coming back to it with fresh eyes.
We tried.
Or you got back in and it was the same fight.
I tried to step away. It was really hard for me to kind of step away from it, you know, because it was just constantly on my mind. But I tried to do that as much as possible to give myself a little bit of perspective on this thing. But, you know, ultimately we found our final cut. And, you know, I think we all felt pretty good about it.
And then did you hit the sound world, the post-production sound world?
Oh, my God, that was a whole nother thing, too. Fortunately, sound on this one was great. My sound mixer, Jordan, he recorded beautiful audio. And then our post sound designer, Jacob Proctor, he is a phenomenal sound mixer. He created all the sound effects. He mixed the entire thing. And he worked tirelessly on this thing for, I think, 6 or 7 months straight. You know, he slaved over this film on sound.
Wow, so between your picture edit and sound, it was over a year.
It was. It was actually about a year and a half.
Wow, were you going crazy? Like, I was going mad. Yeah, you're like, I got to get to festivals. It's time to get this done.
Yes, our composer, he was having to create essentially two different scores. You had one score that I said I wanted really big and orchestral, dramatic, operatic, and then another score that's kind of more synthetic to kind of portray the real world. So he had these two different scores that needed to kind of blend together in the end. And so he was, I think our composer, Christopher Doucette, was having a nervous breakdown because he's saying, how do I compose?
Because the director was calling him 5 times a day saying, where's my...
Yes. So he worked on this thing for a year, the score.
Really?
He worked on it for a year.
And you had given him, Well, nowadays, I guess a DVD and...
He had a lot cut to work on. He prefers to work off of kind of lot cuts so he can hit the beats and that kind of thing. But...
Yeah, he doesn't want you changing anything after he's written. Sure.
That's right. And so he worked tirelessly on this thing as well. And the great thing about the sound mixer and the composer is these two own a studio together.
Oh, great.
And so they work in tandem. So in many parts of the film, you can't tell what's music and what's sound because they kind of collaborated together on that. So you get this beautiful fusion, which really doesn't happen, actually, on a lot of films. The sound mixer is completely separate from the composer.
Completely, yeah.
So these two are kind of working as one. And you get
and that's how they work.
That's how they work on every project. And it's a great... That was a big part of why I use them, and I'm so loyal to them. I love these two.
Yeah, they're like a secret weapon.
They really are.
Yeah.
They really are. So, yeah. And I thought the music and the sound kind of came together just wonderfully. I couldn't be more happy with that. They did a phenomenal
Which
job.
Which is another thing that absolutely makes it look more polished. Makes it... the old joke, right, is that if the sound's bad, people think the camera's wrong.
Absolutely. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. A film is so dependent on its sound and music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, at Film Invasion this year, we had a 15-minute short that was took place in a center for the blind.
Really?
With over 20 actors were blind actors, and they came to the screening.
Really?
And the cool thing was their short played with, I think it was a block of 5 shorts, and so the blind audience really enjoyed the other work too, listening to them.
How amazing.
Yeah, it was fat. It was a beautiful day, actually.
Wow.
It really was. And during the Q&A, a blind woman in the front row was like saying, you know, I noticed such and such. So once you got all these pieces together and your picture and sound was locked, then what was your next step? You hit the festival circuit hard?
We hit the festival circuit hard, and we were lucky enough to have our premiere at Film Invasion, thanks to one Jeffrey Howard.
Well, and many others were on the jury, but
no, that was a really great...
It's funny, it was such a busy festival for me that I didn't know who was a premiere and who wasn't. So that's very cool. I'm very glad to know it was a premiere.
You were the
first. And it makes it kind of special.
Yeah. You popped our festival cherry.
You know, and then for how long were you doing that? For a full year on the festival circuit?
It was about a year, yeah. So, I mean, the great thing about your festivals, you know, you were the first to accept us. And I think from there, a lot of festivals kind of picked up on the film after that. So that was great. We had a really great showing at the Rome International Film Festival. It's Rome, Georgia, actually, but
I made the Rome face there. Yeah.
It's this really, really great festival that I can't talk highly enough about, where the whole town is kind of dedicated to the festival.
Yeah, I have small town envy with film festivals because... Lord knows if there's not, you know, art house theaters and whatnot in a community, a film festival must be so much fun to bring.
It really, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, yeah, and that is, I guess, one of the perks of having, you know, that small town kind of setting. Because the whole town kind of comes together for that festival and they celebrate it kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And it becomes this big event, which is nice. And you don't get that in a place like L.A. where there's 14 million people and...
And they've all got 700 entertainment options for the day.
There's 800 events happening on the same day.
And many who would love to come see an independent film from visionary young filmmakers don't know that there's a film festival going on 5 minutes from their home that day.
Right.
You know, they just don't know because marketing in Los Angeles is like, you know, throwing a pebble into the ocean.
It's true.
So I'm a little jealous of the Rome, but so that's great that you got that experience.
That was really special.
Good on you flying out to Georgia.
It was fun, yeah. It was really, really neat. And the organizers, April and Seth, were totally accommodating and made us feel really welcome. And it was really neat. And I mean, the same kind of for the Block Festival, actually, which is in Logan, where they pretty much kind of convert Logan, Utah, which is really where we shot the film. They converted kind of 3 blocks into this festival space where there's music and arts and film. So we took part in that festival, and that felt like kind of the whole town coming together again. It was that small town kind of vibe, but great turnout, lots of enthusiasm. It was really neat.
That's a fun experience. That's really great.
Yeah, and it was great to be able to bring the film back to the place that it was shot, and show it to the crew members who had worked on the film and that kind of thing. So
right, because they're all your posts and everything is here.
That's
in
right.
LA.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, all those people who had devoted so much to it.
That's right.
Had become strangers in a way to the project. So that is a cool story.
Yeah,
did you have a packed house out there in Logan?
We did. We had a great turnout. It was really, really neat. And it was so fun to bring all the crew members back who had worked on it to be able to see their contribution up on the big screen.
Well, and am I wrong to assume that when there's a scene in Artifice that shows a significant amount of crew of the film within the film, that's your crew,
that's
right? Like
their crew.
They were extras too.
That's right. We were really struggling to try and fill that in because our crew was so bare bones. It was so skeleton. It's like how
that
do
you
we...
had people's moms and dads and cousins
yes.
come to like stand there and look like you're a Teamster.
Exactly. You need to look really disenchanted, and you need to.
But so was that just one of the best Q&As you could ever have? Was having that local crowd just be so happy? I mean, did they even know the location? They're like, oh, that's the old shut down.
I think they knew every little part of Logan that film was shot in. Absolutely, they recognized it, and that the Q&A was really, really neat. And what's fun about Brandon, our actor, what's fun about doing Q&As with him is he's very off the cuff.
He didn't make it to Film Invasion, did he?
He didn't. I think he was, I'm not sure where he was.
He might have been working or something.
He was out of the state, I believe, at the time.
I think it might have been a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Which isn't as friendly as now we're all Sundays. But
yeah. I think we had Julia there at the... Julia, who was in it, and she was really great. It was fun to do the Q&A with her at the Film Invasion there.
Yeah, but so that's great. So you and Brandon got to be there.
Brandon's very off the cuff.
And he's also from Utah. You guys...
He is, yeah.
You met at the
Utah.
College time, so...
And we essentially kind of came out to L.A. together. I made the first plunge, and I said, hey, I've got a couch. And he came out, and we lived together for a couple years.
You know, you were collaborators, co-writers... director, lead actor, both producers, and you're still friends once you're done.
Yeah,
that is a truly great accomplishment.
I like to think so. Yeah, Brandon's a great guy, and I think he's hard at work on another feature right now. He's still acting. He's still hustling. So he's doing good. He's doing good stuff.
Right. So you guys went back to your careers after this.
Mm-hmm.
And, and you do a good job. A lot of filmmakers don't even send an email out to all their friends when their film hits Amazon. But you sent one out probably to a thorough enough list that Film Invasion got it.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was smart because sometimes stuff gets their digital release and I don't even hear about it.
Yeah. That was an interesting aspect to this film as well, is because this film was totally homegrown. It was self-financed. We didn't have any kind of constrictions on how we were going to distribute it and market it and that kind of thing. And, you know, we were going to do the traditional route. We got a couple offers for distribution, and we said, let's try and self-distribute, you know. And so we went through a company called Distribber, and they're a really interesting platform. So you essentially kind of pay them an upfront flat fee, and then they take your film and they put it on all the platforms that you would like. Amazon, iTunes, Hulu, you know. Netflix and that kind of thing. And so, and then you essentially kind of keep 100% of the revenues from there on. So it's a really interesting way of distribution, you know, because it really is the Wild West of distribution right now.
Right. So that is the next idea of distribution, which is hilarious. Just yesterday, I swear to you, I learned about Distribber for the first time.
Really?
Because, another Film Invasion filmmaker did a Facebook post about it. And I was like, what's Distribber? And so I looked at their website. So you went through them.
I went through them, yeah.
You chose to use... You said no to the other guys and said, you know what? We're going to be more hands-on.
Yeah, and it was really mainly kind of just as an experiment to kind of see because, I mean, we're at such a new paradigm shift for how films are distributed, especially independent films, you know? I think we're going through that transition that the music industry went through, I don't know, 10 years ago or so with the online music and all that. But it's been really interesting because the challenge is that we have to market the film. We're, you know, we have to do that ourselves and we have to try and get it out there. So that's a challenge. But then on the other end of it, you own the film essentially, you know, which was, it's kind of neat as a filmmaker to actually be able to own your film.
Yeah, it's still yours.
It's still ours, right. So, yeah, it's been kind of an interesting experiment.
So you guys just need to get in the tabloids or something. Right. You have to make Brandon do something extreme.
We had thought about that, trust me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's been just kind of an experiment to see how this self-release thing does.
Yeah, but distributor mm-hmm. handled the conversions for you and the encoding.
That's right.
All those things that needed to be done.
They did, and they handled it in a really timely basis, and they were really prompt on responding and that kind of thing. And the rollout onto the platforms went just as expected. So I was really happy with them. And it's interesting to take control of your own film's destiny.
Yeah, and what, there's a website you can log on and you can see how many people have rented your film?
Yes, they have a real-time kind of sales tracker that shows how you're doing, which is interesting. You're not going to get that with a traditional
distribution
company.
You never know a thing. Yeah, you never know. They don't want you to know.
No.
So you mentioned Brandon is working on a script. Mm-hmm. How about you? What are you aiming to do next?
So it's interesting. So the script that I came to LA with Brandon, trying to get made through the studio system because it requires a little more.
Yeah, the Shakespeare one?
That was our first short film.
Oh, that's the short.
Together. Mm-hmm. So this is a feature.
As you approach 50, your short-term memory just goes.
Me too. I'm already losing it. So this is a feature that Brandon and I wrote years ago and came to LA with the goal of getting made. But you know, we didn't, this film Artifice was kind of my proving ground as a director to say, I am capable of directing a full feature. Brandon is capable of starring in a feature. And so what I'm doing now is I'm reapproaching that script, trying to get it made. It's kind of a nitty gritty thriller set in the Alaskan wilderness, about a documentary filmmaker. So, I guess I'm going back to the theme of kind of filmmaking.
Should I mention Werner Herzog?
Yeah.
Because he
most
went
definitely
up there
an inspiration.
For Grizzly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huge inspiration.
I really, really enjoyed that interview, particularly because of Steve's level of honesty. He's on the forefront with the self-distribution thing online, and he was so open and honest about it. I guess I should call him up and thank him for that one again. And of course, I highly recommend his film Artifice. It's free if you have Amazon Prime. And if you don't have Amazon Prime, you can rent it on Amazon Video or iTunes. If you go to discoverfilm.net, you can see the trailer for his film. And you can learn more about me and the film festivals and all sorts of things. That's discoverfilm.net. All right. Thanks for listening.